Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN. Anita,
Yes, Mel.
we have a new friend. We don't even know her yet.
I know, but I'm super intrigued to find out more about her. So let's get right to it, shall we?
Yes.
This is, tell us your name, insert name here.
Hello, I'm Sari, Sari Overby. Nice to meet you guys finally.
Oh my goodness. Nice to meet you too. Sari, how do you spell your name?
Sari.
Where is this name from? It seems like a name that's made up. Is it?
No, doesn't it sound like I should be from some exotic place, but I'm not. My mom and dad wanted to name me Sarah, but thought that was they just wanted to do a little spin on it, so they came up with Sari. They met a cool Sari one time, and that was that.
Okay. Well, I love
Cool.
it.
Yeah,
I've
same.
never
Oh,
met any other person named Sari,
so you are the only one I've ever met.
well, that's wonderful. I've met a couple, and I always get super pumped, and I like run up to them and give them a hug. I'm like, "Hi, it's so nice to meet you." And they always like, "Okay, weirdo."
Okay, this is the real question about your name. You know, when you go into the gas station and they have like those little license plates or the little charms with all the people's names, they never have your name, do they? Never,
Never,
not
ever, ever, ever.
once.
And I
They
always look. When I was, I'm not now. Now I know better. But when I was little, I always looked. But they didn't have
never.
them.
No, they had Sarah, I bet, but not
Oh, all the
Sari.
time.
Yeah. Sari, where do you live?
I live in Maryland.
Maryland.
Maryland, yeah.
Okay.
Did you grow up there?
I did. I grew up in Maryland and I've just stayed here ever since. I've done some traveling and been always came back. So right now I'm living right between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore.
Ooh, do you like it? Are there too many people that bother you?
There are a lot of people. A lot of people. I will get to this later, but with my husband, we lived in a smaller area of Maryland together, and then that was just too in the middle of nowhere. I needed more people. So then I moved.
Okay, so let's go back there and let's figure out who this husband is, was, am, was, is, was, were.
Absolutely. So my husband is Benjamin, and he's unfortunately died like four no not 4 years ago. He unfortunately died 2.5 years ago at this point. And he had lung cancer, actually, through genetics, not from smoking or any of the stigmas that come with that. But he was diagnosed at age 32, and he was a kick-ass cancer dude, and he made it 4.5 years.
Wow. How old are you right now?
Right now, I just turned 38.
Okay.
So I was 35 when he died.
Sari was doing math in her head.
I was.
There was a little steam that came out of her ears.
I just did some math, and I think that's how old I was when Scott died. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, I think so.
Man, you guys, numbers are so hard now.
Mm-hmm. They really are.
Sari, how did you guys meet? Were you high school sweethearts? Did you meet later?
We had one of those funny stories. The first time we crossed paths, I was 16 and he was 18, and we had a lot of mutual friends, and he was at college here in Maryland, and I went up with some friends for the weekend and met him, and he thought I was annoying, this annoying little 16-year-old, which was rightfully so, I was. And then we, you know, didn't speak for years, and then we ran into each other again through mutual friends when I was 21, and then that was that. Then we stayed together. We did like the typical college thing where, like, in post-college, we broke up for a year, but then we ran into each other again on New Year's Eve 1 year, and then that was it. Then we got together.
You had a gap year from
dating.
We did.
We had a gap year. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the new definition, guys.
I love
I
it.
I redefine
and
it.
In my gap year, I actually traveled around. So yes, exactly.
Perfect. Yeah. What kinds of things did he like to do? Tell us about him as a person.
Absolutely. Ben was the freaking best. All of our husbands were awesome. And he was just this loud, gregarious, larger-than-life human. He had the loudest laugh. That's like what people talk about all the time. And just he was the best hugger. He had these huge dimples, and he would just light up a room anytime he walked in. He would make anybody feel really comfortable, and he loved eating and drinking and laughing as much as possible. And we did that like throughout his whole cancer situation. We just continued to do that. So it was awesome.
So before we started recording, I let you know that often my kids come and interrupt us. And you told us that you have two kids downstairs. So tell us about them. How old are they?
Yes, absolutely. So my daughter, Lily, is 5.5. She'll be 6 in May. And my son, Nicholas, is 2.5. And he'll be 3 in June. And Ben and I did something a little different. We found out that he had cancer. And like right away, we were like, we want to have kids. Like, we were already talking about it. And then we're like, let's do it. So they were like, right before you start treatment, go save your stuff. And then we also started IVF right alongside that. So we had our daughter like 6, 8 months, a year into our cancer situation.
Okay, that is kind of stressful sounding to
yeah,
me as someone that doesn't have kids and also knows about cancer a little bit. But what was that like? You knew he had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, like, when he was diagnosed, what stage was it?
Well, so, like, looking back when I was, like, thinking about coming on here before, I was like, what was I thinking? And I just wasn't. I had no idea, like, what was going on. I had never known anybody. I was very fortunate. Never knew anyone who had cancer. He had stage 4 lung cancer right off the bat because it had started in his lung and then had traveled to his other lung and was, like, in the lymph nodes in between. And he was only 32. So they were very much like, oh, we see hope for this. And, you know, we can, it isn't a death sentence at all. You can still live a life, but, you know, it just depends on how things go. And I mean, there's only a 5% survival rate after 5 years. So he did great. He made it 4.5 and he was awesome. And he was like, we were able to live life for a good chunk of it before he got really, really sick. And when he got really sick, it was down.
Okay, here's another question. So you said it was a genetic cancer that
mm-hmm.
he had. When you guys decided to do IVF and all of that, did you do any sort of genetic testing on the embryos? And If so, mm-hmm. tell us about that. Because
yeah,
I've heard about that. And that also sounds stressful, but promising at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. So with lung cancer, like there wasn't a lot of research going on, but there was a lot of stuff like up and coming. So they were like, oh, if we do IVF, we can test the embryos and find out if they have this mutation. But unfortunately, then we found out that that wasn't an option. Like they were still working on it and it didn't work for us, but that's okay. We still decided to go forward with it because we still don't know too much about what the genetic percentages and like all of that sciencey stuff that I don't understand.
I'm curious what led him to the cancer diagnosis in the first place. Like what was going wrong that made him think something was up?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ben, he was super silly and ridiculous and like terrified of doctors and kind of, I mean, Ben, I love you, but kind of a huge baby. So like wouldn't ever go to the doctor, like if something was wrong. And even though we were together for a long time, we didn't get married until 2015. So around then he started just coughing a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot. And I was like, dude, you got to go to the doctor. Like, no, I'm not going. I was like, I'm not making your appointments for you for the rest of your life. Like, go to the doctor. And then one day somebody was walking past us and they heard him coughing and they said, do you need some help? And I was like, fine, I'll make you an appointment. And he went to the doctor and they immediately started testing for everything. They thought that he had, first it was walking pneumonia. Then we got sent to a pulmonologist who thought it was unknown. I remember him asking, could this be bird flu? And I was like, no, it's not bird flu. And he got a biopsy done. But even through that, they thought it was just an infection, like a really bad lung infection. And so then they found out it was cancer and they were just completely shocked, as we were too.
How long did it take from his first time going to the doctor until you got a definitive cancer diagnosis?
It felt very long, but in retrospect, it was from August until November.
That is a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially
but like,
when
through that, I mean, I was just so naive. I just never, ever thought that it was cancer. Like, that just didn't even cross my mind.
Okay, question. Did you think that he had a man cold and that he should just stop coughing? Because I probably would have gone there and been like, could you just quit making all that racket? It's disruptive to my peace.
I definitely thought it was allergies and so did he. But then, like, it kept going on and I was like, dude, like, call. And just the fact he wouldn't call, I was like, in my mind, I expected us to be together like for the rest of his life. I was expecting like many years to come. And I was like, I'm just not doing that. I'm not calling for you. But
damn it.
Yeah. And even if I did, it wouldn't have done anything like at that point.
Yeah. Well, it just would have meant that you, so say like he started coughing in July and you called in July. It just would have taken from July to November to figure out what's
exactly
going on.
Exactly.
As opposed to August. So,
and he was like the best patient. He was so loving and wonderful. And we became like good friends with all of the doctors that we had been working with and the nurses. He was just awesome. Just so great throughout the whole thing.
You said that your second child, I can't remember if you said boy or girl, but mm-hmm. second child was 2.5, right?
So yeah, so when we decided to have our second, Nicholas, so I don't know how to explain this. I'm going to go back a little bit. Ben, at first he was able to just take this pill. It was a targeted therapy for about 2 years and he didn't have any side effects or anything. Like we were just eating and drinking and having a great time with life as normal. He was working. I was working. I'm a social worker and Ben's in IT and we were both working at the same nonprofit. And like we carpooled and all of that. And then I guess around year two, like the cancer started spreading. Our daughter Lily was already born and he went on to a clinical trial and that lasted for about a year. And then things started going south and he had weird side effects with that. Like his face broke out a lot and he just had very strange. And towards the end of it, he started throwing up a lot and they weren't doing MRI testing. They were just doing body scans. And then they said, okay, we see that your cancer is progressing. So let's do a full body scan again. And they found out that it had spread to his brain and was like all over the place. But then they did a re-challenge of the targeted therapy and it cleared up the brain mets completely. And he started chemo and that ended up shrinking the tumors again in his lungs. And he was doing, I mean, we could like, we had a whole system, like he would be doing okay for 2 weeks and then he had chemo and he wasn't that great for a couple of days. And then we had extra help during that time and it was manageable. And then I really wanted another baby and he did too. So we were like, okay, this is the time. And then we decided to have our son. And then a month later, all of the brain mets came back and he got extremely sick and everything went downhill from there.
So had you had your son before he died?
With 3 weeks before he died.
Yep. Oh, perfect. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And no all of this, there. So like that part, me being pregnant with Nicholas and Ben getting more and more sick was all during COVID also. So that was really cool. That was really awesome. An awesome time to have things happen.
Yeah. Like how was childcare for you when you needed to help Ben and then being around Ben? Tell us about that.
Well, thankfully, since we both worked at the same place for so long, and I mean, truly everyone loved Ben. Like I just can't explain. Like he just had an awesome air about him and they were rooting for both of us, I guess, since we had been there for so long. So they were really accommodating and let me work from home. And Ben, at that point, he said, I decided to finally stop working to like get some time, more time with my family and spend some time alone trying to work things out mentally. And then the whole world stopped working. So then now everybody is home because he stopped like right before COVID started. So we just kind of, we had to take Lily out of daycare because it just wasn't safe for us. He was so, you know, compromised at that point. But we managed a lot of me like trying to work and him taking care of her for like half the day. Then my parents would come over or Ben's parents would come over and help a lot. And we like knew the cycle of when he would feel okay, when he wouldn't, and like when to call people ahead. But that worked for a little bit. But then shit got real bad. So I can't really remember what we did, honestly. Somehow I was still working and pregnant and taking care of Ben and Lily. And somehow we survived, but it was pretty wild.
That's a lot.
It was
a lot to carry.
It was a lot. And even goodness. Like during his treatment, like because of COVID, I went to every single thing with him and like we were just such a team. Everything that we did, it wasn't he had cancer, it was we had cancer. And like he was such a great support for me and vice versa. Me more emotionally, him physically, like I could physically, I would just know when something was wrong. And but even that, like I would go take him to chemo and sit in the car. I couldn't go inside. I couldn't use the bathroom. And I would bring a beach chair with me to like sit outside of the parking lot and read a book. It was like my time to myself.
Okay. You're a social worker. So yep. Obviously you're completely trained on how to deal with situations like this, right?
Oh, like, of course. Absolutely.
Not the most broad job of all time. Yeah, I was actually, can I ask something about that? What type of social worker are you? Because that is a really big category.
Mm-hmm. So at that time, well, and now I work with child and adolescents. At that point, I was the clinical supervisor of a therapeutic group home. So for youth that have a lot of mental health issues and need a lot of extra support in the community, I was overseeing the clinical stuff there.
Okay.
So that was really stressful. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you're dealing with people's trauma.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you have your own trauma.
I just wonder about, you know, looking back, if you think, well, that didn't help me at all. Like, I should, quote unquote, have known how to deal with this situation, but I didn't know how to do it. Or did you feel like it did prepare you?
I don't think it prepared me at all, just because it's so different. Like the trauma piece, like I am a trauma therapist, technically, but that is just such different trauma than the trauma of losing your spouse. Because I mean, I was working with kids, so of course it was their parents and other traumatic things that had happened in their lives, but losing your spouse is just something that, as you guys know, like nobody else can understand. And no matter what type of therapy you're in or providing, it's just completely different. That didn't do anything to prepare me.
I'm not sure if you've listened to one of our guests, Susan Hannafin McNabb, that we've had on the podcast, but she is a social worker and she works with Soaring Spirits as well. And one of the things that I remember her saying was when her husband died, she went and got all her social work books and just threw them out. She's like, yeah, none of this helped me.
Yep, and I do remember that.
I did some of the and I've done a little bit of social work, like master's program, and even just reading kind of how the materials are presented in class. And you know, it is, again, such a broad degree. I can see why that's the case. Because before I would have thought, well, you're working with people and you're working with different types of trauma in different, you know, just people, like people are all people. And it's like, no.
No.
It's are so there hard. Any elements of it that have helped you in going through your own process?
I think a lot of it with my daughter. I ended up, so Lily was only, she was 3 when Ben died. And so, but we were always very open with her and she's always been very wise beyond her years. And like we told her what cancer was. Lily helped shave Ben's head when he was losing his hair. Like he would involve her in like, I have to go get my cancer medicine today. What Band-Aid color do you want me to wear when I come back home? And like she would help him and bring, like if he was sick, she would bring him food and just made it as wholesome of an experience as possible, as weird as that sounds. And like watching movies in bed together and just spending time. And I was just so concerned about her after he died, of how she was going to handle and understand death as a 3-year-old, like, and being so caught in the middle of it. I think that my social work degree sort of helped me with that to a degree. It gave me a lot of resources. I was able to use my social work resource situation to find like the right therapist and right words to use with her. There's few and far between group grief things for kids, but like I was able to find them just by knowing the right words to use.
I'm convinced that that's actually social workers' real, I don't want to say job because that's not the right thing. What's the word I want to say? Their real specialty is just being the ones who can procure the resources. Like they're plugged into the different organizations and the different like companies that can help you. And it's invaluable. You don't even think about it until you're the one that's stuck in the middle of something and being like, who can help me? And the social workers are like, I know who can help you. It's these people. You guys are like the great brokers of help.
Yeah, the middleman.
Like I would do so many art projects with Lily, like after Ben died, of like, this is how we can keep his memory alive. This is what we can, and just trying to find different modes and a lot of, I'm not an artist at all, but like lots of art projects and different things to try to help her express herself and understand things as much as possible.
Wow. Did you know Ben was going to die? And did Ben know he was going to die?
So logically, yes. Logically, we knew. Yes. And we would talk about it all the time. We never, ever could have talked about it seriously, though. Like it was like, at my funeral, make sure that there's like one of those Halloween ghost sounds, like, woo, like make sure that's like spooking everybody out when you're there. At my funeral, like make sure everyone eats some chicken wings and throws the bones in the casket. Like just like make sure everybody has a squirt gun fight when we're there. Like just silly things. And that's as far as we would get. But we knew that he was declining and we knew that he was going to die. But when he did actually die, that was a total shock, like complete shock. He didn't know. I tried to tell him because it was so fast. It was within 24 hours. Like he started not feeling well. And then it just from there went downhill. And thankfully we were involved in hospice care at that point. Not like, but they very much explained it as a, what's the word? He was still getting treatment,
There's almost like a formality to have it be under hospice care.
Or like transitional kind of.
But he was, it was co-occurring, I guess. Like he was, but it was like a.
Like more like palliative care?
It was technically hospice, but he was still for some reason able to get treatment. Okay. I can't remember it now. And they, when they came in initially, like they would come at home and they, and it started because Ben got an abscess that got, he had to get surgery on. So, Anita, I know you do wound care, and I became a wound care person at that point. Oh, I'm really good at it.
Delicious.
Anita needs an assistant right now. I happen to know this for real. So maybe you could apply. Yeah. Huh, Anita?
Yep, come on over.
I was really good at it. So with that, we had an at-home health person come in once a week to like check to make sure I was doing okay with my wound care skills. And then Ben saw like, oh, this is helpful. Like it's helpful for you, Sari. It's helpful for me to be able to just to ask somebody. So then he would finally agreed, okay, I'll have hospice come too. So a hospice nurse would come once a week, check in. And when Ben would get really sick and like unable to stop throwing up, I could call them and say, hey, what do like, this is the medication I'm giving him. Is that okay? They're like, yeah, yes, absolutely. Or try this too. Because the goal was always to keep him out of the hospital. And when the day he died, his stomach was hurting. They came in to see him and they were like, you should go to the hospital. He agreed to. And then at the hospital, I wasn't there because I was home with Nicholas. Like one of the only times I didn't go with him. And I'm not quite sure. Like they were just like, they wouldn't tell him that he was dying. They didn't give us much information, but it was very obvious. And the hospice nurse called me and said, Sari, he's dying. He can't come home tonight. Like he really can't. His blood pressure is too low. His organs are shutting down. And I didn't believe her. No one believed her, but they got him a bed at hospice. And Ben was still lucid and talking. I drove him there. I told him that they said he was dying. He said, I'm not. No, I'm not. That's ridiculous. And within less than 24 hours, he died while we were there.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
And you're just about to deliver a baby.
No, I had a baby. I was breastfeeding.
Oh, that's right. You said 3 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, he was 3 weeks. Ben was able to make it during the delivery, like obviously before he died. That was a huge concern of mine. I really didn't want to go have a baby without him. So somehow he was able to, and he stayed with me for the birth, and then he went home because he couldn't stand up any longer. So, but he was able to be there.
Please tell me you had tons of help with your two children after he died.
I am super lucky. I'm incredibly close to my parents and incredibly close to Ben's parents. And really, our moms like are just absolute heroes. They somehow figured out a schedule and were like rotating shifts almost. Like they would come and stay with us, especially when I was getting late into my pregnancy because Ben couldn't drive and we lived an hour away from the hospital. So we were never really left alone. So they would have like rotating shifts as who was to stay with us just in case I went into labor.
So, oh my gosh. Grief sucks so bad and is insane, right? And postpartum can also be insane. And I know it's different for each person, even though I don't know anything about it. tell us about that? It sounds extra horrible.
It totally was. And sorry, I feel like I'm all over the place. But yeah, it was. It sucked a lot. I truly don't remember a lot of that time. But I swear, Lily and Nicholas, they're my heroes. They kept me going because I don't know what would have happened otherwise. I was so tired. That was something I was not prepared for in grief, just how beyond exhausted I was. And not like the typical postpartum, you're tired. This was like a whole other level of just exhaustion. And I was so scared that something would happen to the kids because I was so tired. So like my mom stayed with me for months. And at that point, I had finally stopped working, like right before Ben died. And so I was just gave all of my attention to the kids. I remember walking outside with Nicholas for like hours at a time, just walking and listening to podcasts, listening to other people's stories. And that's why I wanted to come on here. Like, I felt so alone and I just needed to listen to other people and know that they just what happened, that I wasn't the only person that had this situation.
You wanted to hear other people's suffering as well.
I did, like, which is yes. Terrible, but also like that they were okay. Like, mm-hmm. That was helpful for me because I
solidarity.
Just
solidarity.
If I was ever going to, I was just like, is this ever going to be okay again? I don't know. How am I going to do this?
Oh my gosh. One of my friends, and I also, of course, don't know that this is everybody's experience. I'm assuming it's not. But after she's had babies, she's had the anxiety, the postpartum anxiety and like suicidality that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. Did you feel any of those sorts of things? I mean, I felt like that with no baby. Did you feel like that being postpartum?
I mean, I'm a pretty anxious human being anyway. So yeah, I was certainly anxious. I remember specifically one time, it was the summer when Ben died. He died in July. And we were at the beach or the pool or something. And I was like, I can't go underwater. What if I die underwater and I can't come back up? And I was just so worried that something was going to happen to us all the time. I didn't have the suicidality until a bit later. It wasn't as you talked about, like passive suicidality, where I was just like the rats eat me, whatever. Like,
the rats. That would be the
That's
worst.
A good one.
The worst way.
Come here, ratty rat. Have a nibble.
Let me lay down. Like, whatever.
Although, I'm telling you, I have heard stories that are not too far from that. So,
like being thrown in with pigs? Is that
no,
one of those
but
stories?
Like your dog eating your toes and you don't know because you don't have feeling in your toes.
You have frostbite or something?
You have neuropathy? Yeah. It's not good.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny because, again, we point this out from time to time in our interviews. Here we are. There are three of us and we're making jokes and we're looking at each other and we're all relatively pleasant looking in our demeanor. But somebody that's just listening in that hasn't been through this stuff could be like, what is going on? They're absolutely. Like, yeah, I wanted to die. And now I'm here and I listen to podcasts and now, you know, we're talking about rats and laughing.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that and the listener who might be like, what is wrong with you people?
Yes.
how are you laughing with us and being sort of a human?
Mm-hmm. I really think a large part of it was how much I got to grieve with Ben, because he truly was like my best friend in the whole world. And we grew up together and we still wanted to live while he was alive. So we had our kids, we bought our house, we lived the best that we could. I mean, he was just a goofball and so was I. So I think that was really helpful, being able to process as much as we could together. And then after, I think my kids just kept me going, like, and my mom, I love my family so much and just didn't want to let him dying define everything, because he didn't want to die and he worked so hard to stay alive for as long as he did. Like, his body was done so much earlier than he physically died. And so I just felt like I still get to be here. And so I want to be here and I want to be here as much as I can.
I have a question about some terminology that we use surrounding You just said Ben fought so hard to stay alive, or tried so hard to stay alive. And some of the terminology that our society uses around that is they talk about fighting a battle, right? His cancer battle. And then when somebody dies, it's often said they lost their battle with cancer.
I hate that.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I've really come to think of that in a different way than I used to. And I want to hear your thoughts about that.
That's like the one thing that makes me still furious. It makes me so mad. And when he did die, I was like, don't ever tell me he lost his battle to cancer, because he didn't. He survived for 4.5 years and he kicked ass. Like, he did such a great job. He was still able to live and laugh and do the things he wanted to a degree. I think some people do, like, they don't. I don't know. I lost my train of thought. I'm not sure.
Is it because it's seen as, is it because the word lost is seen more like a failure?
I think that's why it makes me angry. Okay. Like, he did everything he could to survive as long as he could. That's not losing. It was a terminal illness, and nobody would say those words, but like, looking back, like, obviously it was a terminal illness, and he did everything he needed to do and more. And
there's kind of two thoughts I'm having. One is that we've associated kind of this morality with, if you stay alive, then it's a moral victory. Like, you did it, you know, you won, you're the best. And then if you die, then you didn't try hard enough. You weren't valiant enough. And every person tries their best. I mean, I've never seen anybody just be like, I'm going to give up.
I'm going to not try my best if I get cancer.
Hey, but wait.
I have no kids.
That's the second part of it, is that the weird morality that we put with that. If you're faced with death, and death is going to happen, there is a valor in submitting to that, you know, to saying, I know this is going to happen, and I'm not going to keep fighting this battle because I can't stay alive. Like, we aren't gods. We can't keep people alive. And so it's just really strange that, because we call it a battle, when the battle is quote unquote lost, to submit is not an act of weakness either. So those are my two like weird thoughts about that terminology.
No, I love it. That was beautifully said. And I wasn't able to articulate it that beautifully. You did awesome. But that's exactly
you can steal it.
Yeah. Like, he just, even the cancer battle, like, yeah, you are battling. You're battling. You're trying to figure out all of these different treatments and doing everything you possibly can. And even if you decide not to, like, because sometimes you just can't physically, mentally, like, there's just, you're not able to. And that's okay. But that doesn't mean that you lost. That doesn't mean you succumbed to something and let it eat you. And now it just, the term lost their battle to cancer, it just doesn't represent who they are as a person.
I have a question that, if this is not okay to ask, I'm going to take it out.
Yeah,
were you guys religious, non-religious?
Not religious. I'm not religious at all. Ben grew up kind of religious, but then he wasn't. So
religious-ish, but then not.
Yeah, Ben was religious-ish, and then not.
Okay, so here's my second part to this question. I have a friend whose dad has cancer, a terminal cancer, and that family is also not religious. And sometimes people give them books and other things that are now like, hey, we know your life is maybe headed to where you're going to die. Here's a book about the afterlife and religion. So maybe now this is a good time. Did you guys ever get things like that presented to you?
Well, no, sort of. We have a friend whose family is very, very religious, and she wanted to pass along a lot of relics. And Ben and I were like, hell yeah, that's so cool. We'll take whatever. Who knows what's going to happen? But it just never ended up getting to us. But nobody ever ended up, because then I'm very extroverted and was like, everyone should know what's happening. Like, and we had a Facebook page where I gave people updates, but Ben was like, I don't want anyone really knowing. So he was like, I mean, they can know how sick I am, but also with COVID, he was able to like really hide behind that a lot. So people didn't know he was dying. Like, it wasn't very obvious. If you saw him, then you would know. But otherwise, there's no way. Ben was a big dude, and he lost like over 100 pounds, and had, like, he had a huge beard before. Then he was all the way bald, no beard. So he was obviously sick. But no, we didn't have any religious, a lot of like, oh, we're keeping you in our prayers. You're in this prayer circle at this church, at this synagogue, at this place. And we were very welcome and open. Like, thank you for, why not? Like, there's no harm in that. Thanks so much for thinking of us. That's so kind of you.
Did you find it comforting when people would, after he died, say things like, oh, he's not suffering anymore, he's in a better place, all of the religious kind of statements that people make? No.
No.
Did they make you mad, or were you just like, thanks for your whatever?
That's something I don't know if anyone said that to me, truthfully, because I don't remember.
Well, I'll say it now. I'm so sorry for your loss. He's in a better place. God needed him more.
No, that pisses me off. And so Nicholas was born 3 weeks before Ben died. And I remember getting cards and like, I'm so sorry for your loss and welcome your new baby. And I was like, screw you guys. Like, don't send anything. Or like when people sent flowers, I hated flowers. Like, I couldn't, like, Ben's dead. I have to keep these other two humans alive and myself. Like, don't send me something else to keep alive. But just please take them away. I don't want them.
That's funny. It's funny what, you know, it's almost like people who are trying to help, like, you can't win. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of recognize that now. But in the moment, you're like, why would you send me flowers? And they're like, well, we just wanted to say we love you somehow. And that's,
I know.
We did it. And you're like, you terrible people.
And then other widows are like, now I have a hoard of plants and I love it. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I know. It's like, you never know.
Yeah,
oh my gosh. That's so much to deal with. And grieving along the way too, knowing that he has stage 4 cancer, is a whole other thing. And I know Anita has talked about this a little bit with the recent passing of her sister. So it makes me wonder what kinds of conversations you had as far as, I know you said that squirt guns at the funeral and then it was like left at that. But did you guys ever get to the part where he may have said like, yeah, I want you to date again eventually or find somebody? Or did you also keep that at squirt guns?
I tried to have those conversations with him, which I truly have zero regrets about anything that we did. I think I love how we handled everything together. Sometimes I think back and I'm like, oh, I can't believe I said that. Like, I was like, is it okay if I get married again? Are you okay if I date again? And he said, try women. And then laughed and moved
on. Oh my gosh. Why do the funniest people die? We meet. I feel like I've met all these people, but they're dead and they're so funny. Dang it, Ben.
So have you taken his advice or?
I'm actually with, not, I'm not with a woman. I am with a man.
We were going to hit so many bases with this interview had you done that.
I started dating, I think, a little bit earlier than I needed to. I just needed to do something to feel alive again. Like, I was just like, do something for myself, like, that wasn't nurturing to, like, a grieving 3-year-old and a screaming baby. I just had to. And I couldn't be a therapist again at that point, mentally. And so I was like, what else can I do? And I had friends, they all live very far away, and I just needed to do something for myself. So I started dating, and I wasn't dating very long. Then I met this dude on Bumble, and I fell in love with him. He fell in love with me. And that was that. Now we live together, and we're combining our families. And
okay, so he had been partnered before. Does he have a dead partner?
He doesn't have a dead. Nope, he is an alive partner. Okay. An alive person.
Mm-hmm. How's that going?
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly different. But his kids are older. He's the same age as me. I'm 38. He's 39. And his kids are 22, 18, and 13. So he started very young versus me, we started late. So it's just a very different dynamic. And he's lived in a different state before, but he had moved to Maryland before when we met. But his daughter lives in a different state, and his son actually lives with us, his 18-year-old son. So,
Is that why you moved? You mentioned that you were in the middle of nowhere, Maryland, and now you're more in the city-ish. Is that why you guys moved, or?
No, that just was, I was like, I cannot be in this isolation anymore. So I was lived in a very, it was a great place at the time, but I had just outgrown it. I needed a Target close by. Like, I just needed something.
I just went to Target and they disappointed me, just FYI.
My same friend whose dad has cancer that got a religious book handed to them told me today that I should just go to Target with my time in between appointments and just go look at the $5 aisle. And I said, I'm sorry, I cannot do that because I will spend $205. And it's true. So you must be slightly more poor now that you live by a Target.
Oh, at 100%. Absolutely. And like food, takeout stuff, like that kind of stuff. Because I didn't really have that where we were before. So
was that your house that you had bought together, though, in the middle of nowhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we bought it. It wasn't in the middle of nowhere. For other people, I mean, there were things around.
But not a Target.
Yeah, not a Target. Yeah. And yes, that Ben and I bought that house together. That was difficult. I ended up staying in that house for about 9 months, but then it was just too big, and I started to feel not haunted by him, but I was just like, this doesn't feel right without him here anymore. And like, he was in a different room a lot of the times, and like, I kept the door closed because I was like, this just doesn't, these aren't positive memories any longer. So I need to move forward.
To ask you about that too. A lot of people have a hard time leaving the place that they shared with their person, or getting rid of things or things like that. How long did it take you before you're like, it's kind of not the same anymore and I'm ready to move on? And did you have a lot of guilt with that? Or because it started to feel like it was time, was it okay?
Because it felt like it was time, it was okay. And it wasn't, I think it was only 9 months, but I started to feel ready like 6 months. And I could tell other, like my mom, my mother-in-law, like you could just feel the heaviness. Like it was just wasn't an uplifting, good environment. We had great memories, but we also had some really shitty memories there. Like he was so sick, and it was just, all of us worked so well together, but we worked really hard, and it just, that was haunting us more than the positive memories. And right when I left, for me, I was like able to remember the good things and the bad stuff. I remembered it too. And yes, I had a lot of trauma and I still do, but like, it wasn't as, I wasn't just thinking about that.
Did anybody try and convince you that that was a bad thing to do so quickly?
No, everyone's quickly. Like, get the hell out. Okay.
They're like, please get out, please.
Are mm-hmm. you closer to your in-laws and to your family yeah. now? Okay, mm-hmm. so they're like, please, it's more convenient yes. for us too.
Everybody was so excited. Everyone was so happy. I think getting rid of Ben's stuff, that was really hard. I still have so much of his stuff. He was a huge sentimental dude, and I am too. So like, I just have random like notes or so many clothes, just random things everywhere that I still have trouble getting rid of, but that's okay. That's my own time, and it will happen or it won't.
You said it's been 2.5 years about since mm-hmm. Ben's
death. It was July 14th, 2021.
What advice would you give to somebody who's from the beginning of the right after the death to like 1.5 years out?
I would say accepting help For sure. Because I didn't accept a lot of help, or I was just like, I'm fine, whatever. Because, like, you don't really know what you need. And people will just say, like, let me know if you need any help. And then you don't,
You're
because you
like,
don't
I'm
know
too
what you
tired.
need.
I cannot.
But I think allowing people to know that you're not okay is so important, because, like, to me, I was like, how do you not know I'm not okay? Like, duh, why would I be okay? But I guess I just put on a really good front. And so everyone just thought I was okay. So letting people know that you're not, and allowing people to provide you with any support and love that they want to accept it. It's okay to accept it. And I really think finding something for yourself to do, maybe not dating, like, that probably I could have explored other things, and I did. Like, I joined a hiking group, I got into therapy, I got into group therapy, and those things were all really helpful. But, like, the hiking group and dating, just doing something where I wasn't Sari the grieving widow, Sari the mom. I was just like, here, I'm Sari now, and I'm doing something.
That's so smart. That's a social worker for you right there. Sari, I have a really important question to ask you.
Absolutely.
Did you have the ghost, the ooh, ghost at the funeral?
I didn't. I couldn't find it anywhere.
No! Dang it.
But Ben's best friend made sure that we had a squirt gun fight after the funeral.
Okay.
Yes. And came to the house squirting everybody. And so that's a great memory. I love
I
that.
have started to collect what I want at my funeral from other people's ideas, and the ghost is actually genius. So I need to find that during Halloween and keep it on hand because they're probably harder to come up with. Mel, you're in
Anita,
charge of that if I
I
die
can
before
help you
you.
with that, but I was just going to request, could we somehow okay, this is going to sound morbid, coincide our deaths on
Yes.
accident and have a haunted house at
Oh,
a
yes.
haunted church with all the sound effects?
I think it's a great idea.
And I would like a bounce house in the
Okay.
parking lot for the kids. That's all.
That's pretty good. We do, and Ben really wanted, he loved wings and wanted us to throw chicken wings in his casket,
I
which
can't
we
believe
didn't do
that
that
was the
either.
best.
But every year on his birthday, people that I've asked people that love Ben, his friends, family, whoever, to eat wings on his birthday. And he loves Star Wars and pirates, so just, like, goofy things, and just to, like, do something that people love to do, because Ben just always loved having fun. So that's been an awesome tradition. And people will send me pictures of them eating wings, drinking beers, wearing Star Wars pirate hats. Even people from, like, my support groups have done it, and or just people like, this weekend I went out and did, I slept in until 12. I never do that. I'm like, yes, that's awesome.
Yes. You know what? What if, like, somehow his casket disintegrated into the earth and they did throw all the chicken wings in there? And so then in 4 million years from now, when people are digging up fossils, they're like, hey, look at this new species of human that lived somewhere from 1900 to 2000, and it was Ben, and they thought that he, like, had a bunch of little wings.
That'd be
Just want
great.
to put that out there.
I think Jason and Ben would have been friends had they known each other. When is Ben's birthday? I mean, maybe we have to have chicken wings that day too.
Oh, March 14th.
March 14th. Okay.
Coming
I'll
on
put that
up.
on my calendar.
Put it on my calendar.
Chicken wing day.
I'll make a post in the Widow Wives Club.
Oh, very good. Very
Yes.
good. That'll be awesome.
Okay, Sari, I have the important question of all time. Ready? Ready? Ready.
Ready.
Favorite cheese? Both yours and Ben's.
Ooh, that's a good one. Ben loved spicy. Anything spicy. Spicy cheese, that was his jam. Like, spicy blue cheese, spicy cheddar. I like a stinky, fancy brie
Stinky
cam
fancy.
fazola thing, like something soft that you can just eat it with your finger.
Okay.
So, like, easy cheese.
Yep.
Just kidding. Velveeta.
There we
Stinky
go.
fancy. Sari, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. and letting us know about your journey and Ben's journey. All right. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, how about you check out our Patreon? It's patreon.com/WWDN. It really does allow us to keep the podcast going.
If you'd like to buy us some tacos, go to buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And we always appreciate a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Till we get to talk to you again, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
And I'm Sari.
And we're just two young widows and one young widow that when you say her name, your phone thinks that it's talking. You're talking to it. Not that that's happened while not we've right been talking. We're all just trying to figure out widow.
We
do
now. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks. And so you don't have to pay extra for that. And you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.